Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Eagle! Go time!
My fly is open.
Pizza, pizza.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it bad. For the show, then go direct to DLNTS.org. And the IC channel is a LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Yeah.
Welcome to episode 877 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Happy October.
We have Joel.
Hello, hello.
We have Joe.
Hey, what's up?
All right. Woo-hoo. I'll let you guys talk or start if you have some tech stuff, because I have a non-tech thing, I have a question slash problem, and I got a couple of tech things. But I'll let somebody else go first, because... why not? And you can talk about what you brought up at the beginning of the show.
Hold on. Let me start before Joel does. I got to make sure I get it in. Or
Joel's
going to take over the whole damn show and we won't hear from anybody else.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's not true.
Right.
All right.
Okay. Anyways, so I got... I picked up a couple of things because I wanted to fix them. I picked up a DS Lite with a broken screen, which I'm still waiting on the new screen for so that I can repair that. Shouldn't be overly difficult. I picked up a 3DS XL that had power problems and the guy wasn't willing to test, so he was selling it for dirt cheap. Picked that up. That showed up today, and I had ordered the battery for it before that because I figured that's all it was. And yeah, I put the battery in it, and it's working just fine. Other than the joystick is a little stiff, but that's working itself out. And
wait, how much was a new battery?
Like $7, $4, somewhere
in
there.
$7. How? You know what? I don't think I've taken. Is it DS Lite? You said?
No, this is a 3DS XL.
A 3DS
that I replaced
XL?
The battery in.
How much did he sell it to
screws.
You for?
I like $40.
$40.
Yeah.
And then a $7 battery, and it's two screws to take out.
Yeah.
And I guess it was just you pop the battery just pops out and you pop the other one in.
Yeah.
It's really easy to do that, yeah.
Super easy. And it worked.
Yeah.
But I also picked up a multi-cart with like 300, no, it's 208 games.
Is it R3? Or R4?
No, it's not the R4. I don't think it's the R4. It's not branded as the R4 or anything like that. It's just a multi-cart. And it allows you to play all these different games that are loaded onto it. And it's got a 16 gigabyte card that's in it already. And it's pretty much full. It's got enough room for some save games. The micro SD card has some room for saved games, and that's about it. What I'm trying to do is copy everything over to a 32 gigabyte card. And I've already seen that it works, although I didn't have any games loaded on it. I just had the control software on it. And so now I'm loading up a bunch of ROMs that I have from, you know, games that I own. And I'm going to test and see if that works. Because I'd love to be able to load whatever game I wanted to on here. Now, obviously,
wait,
I'm not.
Was the software for the card on the SD card?
Yes.
So the card that you slip into the cartridge you slip into the DS is just an adapter, essentially.
Yeah. I think there might be some software on there, because even when there's not a micro SD card in the cart, it's still seeing it as a specific game, which it needs to be able to load into another screen where you can pick the game you actually want to play.
Okay.
So it's... found some loophole there, some workaround or whatever, all on its own, and that software is on the shell, the cart.
What's the format?
Let's see.
Do you know?
It was working XFAT.
Oh, so would you just copy the files over onto another card?
Yeah,
because I know the R3 was like that. You just slip in an SD card with your ROMs on it, and
yeah. And I know the R4 is supposed to work similarly because I did some reading. I did some reading up on that, and it's definitely something I was considering getting. But this was a $20 cart that takes micro SD cards. So, and the R4 is actually a bit more expensive. But I think the R4, you not only get the custom software, you also get some emulators that are built on. But I'm not sure because I've never purchased one. I've never owned any of the DS line before. The only game I've had two Game Boys. One of them was the original Game Boy, and one of them was in a Game Boy Advanced.
I have an R3 or R4. I think it's an R3. The R4 okay. was for the XL, right? And the R3 was for the DS Lite.
Yeah. Well, this cart works on the Lite as well. It doesn't have specific 3DS games on it. I was looking for a cart for that.
Okay, but I know I had one of the R's. I had that, and that was like the greatest thing in the world because you could take your you could take your whole library with you and without having to swap out your car or the cartridges, like. You know, you have like 15 or 20 games. You just grab the ROMs for those because you legally own them already, right?
Yeah.
But you said the one you got already came with ROMs on it?
Yeah, this one, I bought it. They sell them on Amazon. They sell them on eBay. I have to assume that they're legal and then they come with a shit ton of games.
How many did it come with?
208.
208? What, like at that point, what other games are available? <You know? laughs> Now, are they all like, are they?
Well,
now, because I got the original
Sonic Genesis games. I guess they got ported over to DS, and it's the full game. Now, I was hoping to get the original, like, Nintendo version of Mario, but that wasn't on there. They did have some other ones, like New Super Mario Brothers, and they had the DS version of Mario Kart.
Okay. Was it like, up and up, like, or was it, because the gamepad that I got... It had all the games on them, but it was kind of janky. You know what I mean? It was like they didn't have the right names for the stuff on there, and ROMs didn't match up with the names that they were given, and it was like they just guessed at translating them into English or something. I don't know.
No, this is pretty solid, and I mean, it's got all the Pokemon games on there. It's got a bunch of the Castlevania games. Yeah, I mean, I have zero complaints with it.
What is it called? You know,
208 games in one multi cart. And like I said, check eBay, and I purchased it from the U.S. Okay, it's loading this alternate set of ROMs that I had, but it's weird because they're not bringing up any games. I assume it's because I copied the ROMs wrong.
Why can't I find the one you got? 208 games?
Yeah, there's some with 500 games. I don't know how good those are.
Oh, there but, it yeah, is.
It is letting me load
external. $29.99?
Yeah, there are some for like $18 as well. Now, if you're looking at Amazon, then yeah, it's like $29.99. I got mine off of eBay because I was willing to wait because I had to wait for the other stuff to arrive anyway.
I am just completely amazed that, like, Nintendo doesn't come after these sellers on Amazon.
And on eBay, I didn't look on Amazon, but I also found one that's supposed to have a whole bunch of the old Sega games. And I had been hoping that they had like the Sega version of Shadowrun, which I always look for in emulation of some kind. But that one I didn't see, but I did see a lot of other really good Sega Genesis games or Sega Master Systems games.
Man, they take the work out of it. They take all the work out of it. It used to be you had to get this and you had to go find the ROMs and download them and put them on there. Now they just slap it on there for you.
Yeah, and well, I'm looking to see if I can add more, and it looks like I'll be able to once I find some, or, you know, copy some. But, it could take me some time.
Oh, look at this. Here's the 501. It's cheaper than the 208.
Yeah, you don't know what the quality is, though.
Yeah, here's 520. Right.
Yeah, there's some good ones. I mean, and they've got the, the DS version of Grand Theft Auto, which I might try and play. And you can also put Homebrew on and try some emulation, and I hear that works pretty good on the 3DS XL, but it works better on the new 3DS XL.
The new, which that's the one thing in the recent years that Nintendo has kind of screwed up on, was naming of their handhelds.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's hard to tell which one's which.
Yeah, that's my DS Lite, JoJo. The one that needs a screen replaced. I'm talking to my son. He's asking me about it. And no, you can't play with it right now because I need to replace the screen. I need another multi-cart. I'm working on that.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I think
cannot be fun on those.
I've done that. It's well, the not lower screen, that bad.
No, the lower screen's not that bad. And now with the DS Lite, the original version, I don't think the upper screen is as bad as some of the later ones. But like the 3DS XL and a couple of the other ones, there's like this loop thing you have to do with the ribbon cable to get it through the hinge.
Fitting it through the hinge. Oh, yeah.
And Tronix that is Fix supposed shows to be digital.
And it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah,
wait, actually, is that for the DS Lite?
I don't think the DS Lite has that.
Oh.
Some of the early versions didn't. They seemed to have this really simple connection system. I'd have to go back and watch. But the guy I've been watching for that, he like does mostly Game Boys, but he's done other stuff as well, is on YouTube, it's The Retro Future. And that's what kind of convinced me to, you know, buy some of these and start working on them. But a lower screen is a whole lot easier than an upper screen.
Now, the thing that I found, the only problem I had was if you don't have the right, what is it, a Torx screwdriver, whatever it is.
Right,
you don't have the right, the what?
The tri-wing.
It's a Y-shaped
screwdriver. Yeah, if you don't have that, it's the only, you just need to get one of those.
Yeah.
And then the rest was pretty straightforward. Especially if you have small hands. It makes it easy.
But with this 3DS XL, I didn't even have to do that. I mean, it's really, literally, like, two screws on the bottom of the thing gives you access to the battery. I think they made it really easy to replace the outer shell on these, just so that you could do, you know, customs.
Well, if I remember right, I thought you could, the Japanese versions actually, they came that way, as in they were supposed to be swappable. Yeah.
Some of them did. This one's not like that. Maybe it's just the new ones. But it works. And it worked. And all I had to do was replace a battery. Almost disappointing.
I love it. I love it when they're that simple.
Now, it's
got good things going for it when it's that simple. But when I bought it to, you know, take it apart and learn shit...
Are you going to start doing this and then selling them?
I might sell some. I'm definitely liking the 3DS XL right now. I'll probably the same thing I did with headphones, very much gifts or selling. So if my hobby pays for Christmas one way or another, great. Because I know my wife's brother would probably like some of the games on there. So that's a cheap and easy gift if I've already got it here and I'm done with it.
I should try this. My kids bought that DS. I don't think either one of them
is. Yeah, I kind of want to get a Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, I've seen some people working on the Switch, but it's an expensive place to start.
Yep. Yep. No, the main reason I like it, though, is a lot of the games that, like, some of the games that I really want to play, they're in the online store. I mean,
yeah, I hear emulation is really good on the Switch.
Do you have to jailbreak it?
No.
To do the emulation?
No, I mean, a lot of the stuff's just in their store.
Ooh, speaking of emulation and Sega, right now on Steam, I believe it's still going on, but they've got a sale on Sega games for whatever anniversary it is, and it was like $7.99 for a whole crap ton of games, and then Sonic is free.
If you buy it through Steam?
Yeah. Sonic is free to play right now on Steam.
Huh.
Oh, I'll have to look at that.
And then, like, one of their Sega collections is, like, $8 or something.
So I was just looking at getting an emulator on the Switch. I'm trying to figure out how, because I haven't done any research into this. How do you get it on there? You just drop it on the SD card and run it off of there?
I don't know about the Switch. You'd have to ask Joel.
I don't think Joel has a Switch.
I don't have a Switch yet. I don't know about loading, like, your own emulators on them, but I know that a lot of the stuff in there, in the Switch store, like, you can get a lot of the popular games are just already in the Switch store. You don't have to really mess with it. You just pick one and download it. Like, all the old, like, I think Nintendo 64 games are all there. Most of them are.
Well, I know on the Switch, they have the Virtual Console, which
is, yeah, that's what I mean, the Virtual Console, yeah.
Now, the Virtual Console is part of the subscription service, which is only a couple dollars a year. Like, I think it's like $20 a year or something, and you get access to it. And it has a bunch of games, so it doesn't have all of them. And
correct.
You can't, like, pull a ROM in off of that. You're just stuck with whatever they had. But I was trying to see if there is an actual emulator that you can put on the Switch and run ROMs off of that. But I know that's not in the Nintendo store, because they will not give you one of those.
Yep.
Well, anyway. Woo! Is that it, Joe?
Yeah, that's all I want to talk about. All
right.
I'm all done.
It's good stuff, man. It's,
Joe, we got to take over the show now.
We got not taking over the show, Jesus.
You got to get yourself one of the what's the Sony one? The Vita.
Actually,
the PS Vita.
The Vitas are still a little bit expensive. I think their last model came out 2017, and I am looking for broken ones of those as well. But I think the next might be the PSP or the PSP Go. Okay. Because those are a little bit cheaper.
Yeah. All right, Joel, go ahead. Go ahead, Joel.
Well, tomorrow is Ubuntu 2010 day. I'm not, you know, it's quite kind of funny that, like, after all these years, I really didn't think about it until I just realized that, oh, wait, it's October, which means there's a new version of Ubuntu coming.
That's true. I forgot about it myself.
And I just remembered that today. It's a Groovy Gorilla is the code name this year.
Groovy Gorilla.
Yep, and I'm trying to go through these. GNOME 3.38. And some of the features for 2010 is it's going to support fingerprint logins. So if you have the fingerprint reader on your laptop, then you can use that. One silent change they have is support for OEM kernels. So this is like for devices that are sold with Ubuntu, like a Dell sells you a laptop with Ubuntu on it, then it can have an OEM-specific kernel to it. Then the Ubuntu installer Ubiquiti now has support for Active Directory integration, if you care about that. Most home users will not.
Well, I mean, that's pretty cool, I guess. I'm not really caring about it myself.
But. Yeah, me either. But then laptop users will also benefit from high-precision touchpad scrolling in Firefox and Ubuntu 2010 in the default Xorg session. In Firefox 81 and above for pixel-by-pixel scrolling. And, of course, new wallpaper, crappity-crap like that. But desktop league Martin Winpress has teased full Ubuntu desktop support for the Raspberry 4 8GB version.
Cool.
So go out and grab your updates.
Get ready to, do dist upgrade.
I might do that on this laptop tonight, my standard laptop. I've got my wife's old one here. And at least I got the sucker to boot, which is a good thing. It was beeping. 4 beeps. And I determined that said there was a problem, a memory read-write problem. So I opened it up and popped out one of the SIMs and it booted right up. So I'm hoping that it might just be a bad, maybe a bad slot or something. I might try swapping because I think the one I popped out is the new one I just added to it. So I might either try buying another SIM because it's dirt cheap for this laptop, or I might try just switching them back and forth. So put the one that I took out on the bottom slot and put the new one, the old one, the one that's in there now, in the top slot and see if it'll work better. And then after I get the I think she said she had some music on it. I'm going to try getting the music off of it, and then I'm going to probably just put Ubuntu on it and see how it works on here. I need another laptop. Like, I need a hole in the head, but hey, whatever. It's better than throwing it out of the gas, huh?
Yeah. It always comes. How old is it?
I would say it's probably about 4 or 5 years old.
That's not too bad. That's one thing, you know, you get a laptop that's just a little older and it's still good, but if you have a newer laptop, you feel the pain. You know what I mean?
I do.
But it's running, you're going to have it running Ubuntu. And then you're going to be happy. Now, what was wrong with you said the one memory card was bad?
Yep.
And how much memory does it have in it altogether?
That's a very good question.
I'm surprised it had two memory
I thought it had, well, no, it originally had one, which means I think it had probably maybe either 4 or 8 gigabyte. And I think I added a more into it, which got it up to maybe 12 or I don't know whether it has 12 or 13 on it, but.
That's nice. I have like.
I'm trying to get this silly thing to boot off of a USB.
Trying to get what to boot off a USB?
This laptop.
Why doesn't it like booting off a USB?
Haven't figured it out yet. I got a 2010 USB stick on it right now. I want to see if I can get it to boot. Really, I want to boot it into a Linux and then just offload all the music off of it.
Is that what it's running now, Linux, or is it?
No, it's got her old Windows install on it.
That's why I won't let you boot it. It's got Windows on it.
No, I got it. I must have had it in the wrong. It must not like booting off of the one USB port I had next to the CD-ROM drive. Switched to another one. Now it's booting off of the battery with Ubuntu.
Is UNet booting still a thing? What was that for?
UNet booting.
Still around.
Yeah, I thought that was just for making thumb drives, I thought.
Maybe. Yeah, I haven't used it in a while.
Pretty much.
I used one on my Surface called Rufus to make this one, which is basically a Windows version of UNet booting, essentially. It really isn't the same program, but it does the same thing. So hopefully I can get the stuff off of it and see if I can't get this thing to boot off with both sticks in it. If I can't, like I said, the RAM for this thing's dirt cheap. I'll just buy another one. It's a Dell Inspiron 15, and I don't know what chip. I think it's a Pentium with the, I want to say D240, but I don't think, is that a thing? I can't remember. Anyway. And if you're a fan of I would never kickstart this thing, but if you're a fan of or have seen the arcade 1-Up machines, they're bringing out what is essentially a big-ass table. Remember the Surface table they had back in the day?
Oh, that thing's rearing its ugly head again.
Kind of, sort of.
They find a use for it.
Well, I don't think it's the same device, because I don't think, obviously, it's probably not Windows running on it. But essentially what they're doing is it can either be a game board or a game table. So you can play things on it like a Monopoly, Ticket to Ride, and instead of of course playing the traditional board game, it's basically just like playing the board game, but it's playing it on an LCD.
Okay.
And it's by the folks at Arcade 1-Up. So what's the ones that do the quarter scale arcade machines? So
how much
does
it run?
Interesting. The Kickstarter is $500.
$500 to play board games.
I don't think I'd spend that much. If I had $500, I'd probably buy the At Games has a full size emulation cabinet. That would probably be a little bit better and more up my alley. So for some reason this thing booted in and it checked the disk, but now I'm clicking try Ubuntu and now it's booting up. We'll see how well it runs. It should run Ubuntu fine, I would think.
How much does that 1UP Surface thing weigh? Do you know?
The Surface table? The old Surface table? I have no idea how much that was.
This out, I'll look it up. 1UP Surface.
So let's see here.
Wait.
I was right at 4 gigabytes in the one stick that's working is 4 gigabytes. So this one, it's, what I'm thinking has happened is the new one I popped in isn't working for some reason, or it's intermittently working.
What's the Surface table called?
Surface table, I thought it was.
Well, what's the 1UP called?
Oh, that's a good question. It's the Infinity table.
Let's see.
So yeah, you should see that on there.
All right, here's one. I can play Chutes and Ladders for $500.
Yeah, right? I know.
Specifications. Two options, 24-inch and 32-inch. That's all they're going to give you for the specifications? Two options, 24-inch and 32-inch, and touchscreen and removable legs. But it doesn't tell you how much it weighs. I hate when they do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of janky-ass garbage is that, Joe?
Garbage.
Take it away. Send it back. Nobody wants it.
Now, in the pre-show, I was talking a little bit, and I'll bring it back up again. I've tried a new material on my 3D printer other than PLA. I tried printing some PETG or PETG, or I think either PETG or PETG. I don't know how you say it. Everyone says it a little bit differently. It was actually relatively easy to get going compared to PLA, although you had to print at a higher temperature. And a lot of people will run the bed at a hotter temperature. I don't know that you have to run it hotter, but I did. And the quality, I'm very happy with the quality, and it's really achieving what I wanted to do. The PLA I was using was a little bit too brittle for what I was doing. I was making some fidget spinners for some gifts I was going to give to my team at work. And I'd make them out of PLA, and I go to put the bearings in them, and the things would crack. So first one off the bed today, which is probably the third or fourth thing I printed in PETG, popped the bearings right in right away, straight away. In fact, I even had the same scaling. When I was printing them in PLA, I had to scale them down to 99% so that the bearings would stay in the spinner. They were a little bit too big by default. But it took the exact same scaling, exact same settings, except for the temperature, and it printed just great. And I tried a couple different slicers with PETG first. I tried the latest alpha of the Prusa slicer, which is basically SLC3R that's customized by Josef Prusa. And then I reverted back to Cura 471 after I completely wiped my printer profile and restarted it. I had all the things I needed written down and memorized for the most part on the temps and stuff I've been using. So that's the prime things I was changing. The rest of the profiles were pretty much the same. I could probably tweak the retraction settings a little bit here and there, but I don't really think I need to, at least on PETG anyway.
Yeah, well, you might need a little bit of retraction settings.
It's really close now. I mean, I could probably up it about a millimeter and it'd probably be better.
Yeah, and Rich would tell you the same thing, but you might want to up the temperature from what you think it should be if you're having any issues whatsoever printing.
Yep. Well, I started at 240, and that wasn't enough. I upped it to 244, and 244. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. No, wait. I started at 244. I'm printing it, I think, at 250, which that's easily 30.
Yeah, that's where I'm printing.
Yeah, it's about 30 to 40 more degrees than PLA. So.
Yep.
And it looks good. It looks good. I'm getting better quality off of Cura than I am off of the other one.
It is Prusa. Similar temperature to ABS, except you don't need the bed as warm. You can run your bed at like 50 to 70. Matter of fact, what I was doing was I was starting it out at 70, so the first layer would be done at 70 degrees and then just letting it shut off.
Is that 70 degrees Celsius?
Yes.
Okay, I was making sure it wasn't 70 degrees Fahrenheit. I was like, man, that stuff melts pretty low temperature. Is it cheaper than the other stuff?
About the same price.
Yeah, it's about the same price.
But better quality, you say. Or is it about the same quality, it just works better in your printer?
It's more solid than PLA, less breakable than PLA, but it's about the same hardness as ABS. It just prints easier, and I've really enjoyed the quality.
Not bad.
Joel, how you liking the quality?
I'm saying it's probably better than my PLA prints as of late.
Wait, how's your printer doing, Joe?
My printer's doing good after I spent all that time rebuilding it. I thought I talked about that last time. Last time.
I know you had mentioned that you were still considering whether you want to rebuild or buy a new one.
Yeah. Well, there's always, you know, that whole buy a new one thing. But I do get kind of tired of rebuilding that one, but it's working right now, and so I'm probably going to hold off at least until bonus time. But I mean, the Ender 3 V2 just came out, and it's reviewing pretty well, and it solves most of the issues that were a problem with the original Ender 3 and the Ender 3 Pro. But, and, you know, all the upgrades that people normally put on are, most of them are packaged into it already. So I'd probably go with the V2, but they might also come out with a V2 Pro. So I don't know. I'll wait it out. See what happens.
Yep.
But yeah, it is a good looking printer. The V2.
Yep. I'm actually, one of the things I'm kind of planning on is for when we move to the house, I'm probably going to get like a TV and like either a couch or a recliner. I haven't made my mind up what I want for my space up in the office.
So It's an odd, like, either or. It's like,
and yeah, well,
a TV or a couch recliner, but
if you get the TV, what are you going to sit on?
If you get the
no, something to sit on and the TV.
Okay.
So basically, yeah, basically, I want to kind of have like a retro slash man cave kind of section to my area up above the garage, because, you know, right now it's easily 2 to 3 times as big as this room, so I'll have plenty of room. So I'm gonna have a, you know, kind of a nice space up there to spend time, and just not to you know. So that me, I'm basically like a lunchtime, instead of going all the way downstairs, I'll either if I have something upstairs already, which I might, I can just heat it up in the microwave that I currently have in the kitchen now, which will go upstairs, because the kitchen won't need a microwave because it's getting one over the stove, which is by far the way to go, but. Unfortunately, that meant when we moved into the apartment, I was microwaveless until we bought one. And even if you don't heat up frozen dinners like I do on occasion, you forget how often you use a microwave. And just for thawing meat and whatever, you know?
When you're not planning ahead and setting the meat out to thaw hours in advance.
Yeah.
Hours, days, put it in the refrigerator, right?
Yeah,
it depends on how much meat. I mean, if it's a turkey, then yeah, like a week.
Right. Well, I know it would take a week to thaw, but...
Turducken, 3 days.
3 days.
Turducken.
3 days on the out in the sun.
A turducken.
A turducken. Oh. Have you ever had a turducken, Pat?
Yeah.
Did you say yes?
I did.
Was it good?
Fucking awesome.
Wow. That seems like it'd be a pain in the ass to cook, though.
You gotta know what you're
doing. Dun, dun, dun. Were you finished there, Joel? Should I talk about my thing?
Go for it.
All right, so... couple of things, Joel. First off, from last week, have you had Indian food yet?
I chickened out.
You chickened out. Well, I'll tell you what. I made keema.
Did you?
And I made it Monday, I let it sit, which I usually do for most Indian food. I make it the day before, and then I eat it back up. With a chance to let the flavors melt. And I'll tell you this. My first impression was, this is not like most of the Indian food that I have eaten and have made. If I was at a restaurant, I don't know if I would order it. But I couldn't stop eating it. It was so freaking good.
now the recipe you probably found probably had curry in it, or like garam masala or something like that.
It did. I did use garam masala. What stood out is most every Indian dish that I have made, except for a few, but most of them have cumin in them, and this didn't. And that was an interesting, you know, departure. And it didn't like smack you in the face with like spice power, was I guess what I, for lack of a better word to call it. Like a lot of Indian food has a very, very not. It's just flavorful. And this is more subtly flavorful. So it had like two things that were a little different to me. Like when I think of Indian food and when I think of chili, and most chili that I've ever had or made, usually calls for some amount of cumin in it, and this, no cumin, so that surprised me. But it had, I used cardamom and cinnamon, and it was delicious, man. It's easy to make, and if you have an opportunity to order it at it, if you want to just dip your foot in and get a little taste of stuff, keema is really good, and it's not going to overpower you with, like, exotic and bizarre, you know, things maybe you're not used to, or like curry or whatever you're saying. But don't think that if you eat that, if you have a dal or a paneer palak or whatever, or any of the curries, it's going to be like a similar experience, because it's going to be a little different. Now, I've always recommend those, man. Freaking,
and I'm debating whether keema is actually Indian or not. I think it might be Pakistani or something. But, I mean, let's face it, though. Any, like, Indian and Mediterranean and Indian can be very similar sometimes. It just depends on where you make it or get it from, you know. Of course, I'm just noticing, like, the spice profiles when I look up recipes and stuff. So that's not to say that they really are, you know, it's just, there's a lot of the same spices that are in the two, at least this, what I noticed anyway.
Yeah. I'd give it a shot, man. It's delicious. I give it 2 thumbs up. It was so good. I even had it for breakfast this morning. We had leftover. So I have a problem, and it started, I'm going to say, a week and a half ago. And I woke up one morning, and I came downstairs, everything was off. Like, I was first alerted to it because the internet wasn't working. So I thought, I don't know, I came down here, looked, and all the power was off. And the circuit breaker on the outlet tripped. So I put it back in and got everything back up in a few minutes, and everything was happy again. No, you know what it was? Is I came downstairs and I heard my UPS beeping. And I came down and I looked at it, and I'm like, I don't understand why this thing's beeping. Everything's fine. None of the circuit breakers were switched. And that's after it, I tried to fiddle with the UPS and ended up shutting off the UPS. That's when I noticed the reset switch on the outlet was off. So, and this has been happening like every freaking night almost. I come down in the morning and all the power's off. And I thought the only thing that changed was I added another laptop down here that I have plugged in that hadn't been there. But this thing's been plugged in for a couple of weeks now. And it just started. So I had unplugged that, and then it didn't happen for a couple of days, and then it happened again. And then it happened yesterday in, like, the late morning. And I'm like, I'm trying to figure out what the hell is going on, because it was consistent that it was happening at some point between when I went to bed and when I woke up. And then it started happening
random times.
It happened during the day at one time. And the weird thing about it down here is there's one outlet with a switch, with one of those circuit breakers, it's a reset switch on it. Like, it trips the circuit in there for some reason. But when this thing trips, it affects all the other outlets down here, I think, except for the outlet that the washer and the dryer, the washer's on and the dryer's on. But the other outlets are down here, because my daughter left me a note and said, this freezer isn't working anymore. And the freezer is on a an outlet across the room.
Yeah, well, I know in my garage there are three outlets. And there's one of those outlets with the safety reset in it. And if that pops, then all three of my outlets stop working.
And that's what's happening. So I guess now in that kind of setup, it doesn't necessarily have to be what's plugged into this outlet here. It could be anything that's plugged into any one of these other outlets causing the problem.
Yes.
And that's annoying because, again, nothing has changed in over like 2 or 3 months now. It's all been the same.
Something's changed. You're just not aware of it.
Well, something's not happy. Something's causing a problem. But it's one of those things. It's like, how do I figure this out?
Start unplugging shit. See what happens.
Yeah, but it's like, this is what
it's going to be very difficult to troubleshoot because you're not going to know because it doesn't happen consistently.
Right, and the problem that I have is I can't unplug the freezer. I mean, I could.
Well, you can't really store much in the freezer right now either if you're uncertain of when it's going to break.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if the power goes out, I mean, I'm always here. If it goes out, I'm going to know about it if I'm still awake. So I'm going to know about it. And if the power goes out sometime in the middle of the night and I wake up and come down and press that button, it's not going to thaw anything out in the freezer
in that short
period of time. But I don't want to do something stupid like unplug the freezer and then forget to plug it back in 2 days or something like that.
Well, you obviously don't start with the freezer. It's probably not the freezer that's causing your problem. But start with the rest of your electronics. Plug it in somewhere else in the house. See what happens.
That's a big pain in the ass because I can't imagine it would be the Raspberry Pis.
It might be the power supplies for the Raspberry Pis if it has an intermittent short, because that's what it sounds like is happening. Something's shorting. Something's using too much power, and then pop. Right?
Which I'm surprised because everything is plugged into a UPS. Or coming through this UPS.
Maybe it's a UPS.
You know, that's a possibility too. Maybe I need to get a new UPS. This thing's been here for like 5 years.
That's about their end of life, isn't it?
Yeah, they don't last that long, do they? Maybe I should start with that. Replace the UPS. Thought it was my wife and her plants that she's growing. Cause she does like herbs
moisture,
and stuff,
humidity.
Like that.
Yeah, that could do it.
But like I said, that's been down here for a couple of months now, and
yeah, it's been down there for a couple of months. But sometimes it takes some time for water to seep into electronics and make it degrade.
That's a possibility too. Maybe I'll try with the UPS. I've been meaning to get a new one anyway. Ooh. I don't like having to mess with that. So, like, I like it when it all works, you know?
Yeah. And that type of troubleshooting is just going to be a pain in the ass. No fun whatsoever.
Just run really long extension cords from the outlets upstairs.
You could try that. And then if a different circuit breaker pops, you know you found it.
Yeah, there we go.
But if nothing happens, then once things stop happening, you can think you found it, but you'll never know for certain.
Yeah.
No, if you're kidding. Just between times when bad things happened.
It's never the fun I want. Well, at least everything keeps coming back.
That's true.
For now.
Yeah, until the SD card goes out on your Pi.
Yeah.
Well, I have backups and stuff, so.
Until the motherboard goes out on one of your PCs.
One of his PCs. He didn't have that many PCs.
Yeah, I know. I only have laptops, except for this one tower right here, which...
Well, I hear laptops have motherboards.
Yeah, but, you know, if the power goes out, they just go on the battery.
Right.
So
yeah, actually, the batteries do make good, like, surge protectors for laptops.
Oh, you want to know another big pain in the ass? Oh, Joel? Man.
Who? Joel.
Joel's not a pain in the ass right now. Yeah. He's just a pain in the foot. Like, this is another one. This is... When... So, our policy at work, we have... I'm assuming everybody has a password policy at work, and you have to change your password, like, every...
90 days.
Something like that, like every 60 or 90 days.
Not anymore. Not since we went with a two-factor.
Well, we have, like...
Oh, we have two-factor, and we still have to change our password.
You have two-factor to log into your laptop?
Yep.
Wow.
Well, not to log into the laptop. No, the log in the laptop is uses our AD credentials, but to log into anything else, it's all two-factor.
Yeah, we have two-factor on, but not logging into the laptop. Yeah. Like Okta, we go through Okta for all our stuff. But the last time I changed my password... I don't know what the hell happened, but it mucked with my profile, and I lost my browser history in some cases, and it, like, reset my desktop, and it always does that when I change my password, but I noticed it was more noticeable this time, and it's still, like, it didn't propagate the password change correctly throughout the whole system. So if I restart my laptop, I have to log in with my old password, then I have to log in with my new password, and then I'm at the desktop. But for the longest time, for like a couple of weeks, every other day I would end up doing some kind of gesture or whatever that would just put the laptop to sleep. Like, I'm in the middle of doing something and I'm trying to get to a certain thing, and then all of a sudden my laptop would just go to sleep. And then I'd have to sit there and wait like a minute and a half for it to come back up, and then it would kick me off the VPN, and so finally, I was digging around in this damn thing, trying to figure out exactly what it is. And it's damn hot corners, again, somehow got turned back on. And there's two of them, right? There's one hot corner on the desktop / screensaver, whereas if you go down to the lower left-hand corner, it kicks in the screensaver, which... essentially blanks out your screen, doesn't start the screensaver, and fucks your whole system up for a bit, and you can't do anything with it. And I turned that off, and then I found that there's another hot corner up in the upper right-hand side in Mission Control that if you go up to the upper right-hand corner of the screen, it puts it to sleep. I'm like, those are the most annoying things ever on a system. I can't. I between
That's
that
for you.
Yeah, between that and the what is it? The magic bar at the top. I hate that thing because it doesn't have a proper escape key. You got that little magic bar at the top, and every time I go to hit a button towards the upper right hand side of the keyboard, I end up pressing the magic bar and starting what is it, Siri? The Siri search.
Siri.
Oh, that comes up and it takes over and it's like, what do you want to do? And I'm like, turn you off. I hate that thing.
Beaches. Oh. Same thing. Well, that's like the other day, my work phone's an iPhone. All right. So, and I'm like, how do I turn this freaking thing off and restart it? Honestly. And it's like you have to hit the down volume button and what I would call the power button to do that. Instead of just pressing and holding the power button. It's like, how was that easier?
Wait, what's the power button on an iPhone?
I think it can be used like the shutter button, I think, and cameras and other things too. There's other things it can be used for other than
it's just
the power button.
Is it just a single button?
Yeah, it's a single button, yeah.
So if you hold that in, does it shut off?
Nope.
Oh, you have to hold the power.
You have to hold the down volume button and that button.
Here's a question. How do you restart an Android phone? And I don't mean... Like, because I know if you hold the power button.
I press and hold the power button, then I get a menu on the screen. Then I either hit the reboot button or the power off button.
Oh, because when I hold my power button in, I only get a power off option. I don't get a reboot.
That's because I have a Samsung Galaxy Note. So, I mean,
I wonder if
I hold it in, yeah, I get power off, restart, or emergency mode on that button.
I wonder if there's like a somewhere on the settings you can change that option. Like if you hold in the power button.
Yeah, so to restart your the iPhone, you press and hold the side button. Wait a minute. This one here says press and hold the side button until the power off slider appears. That must be for the older ones. Let's see, I have an iPhone 11, iPhone X or 11. Press and hold either volume button and the side button until power off slider appears. I'm like, why can't you just hold the side button? And it's all these weird-ass gestures that Apple comes up with for their OS. It's just, who remembers that bullshit? Like using two fingers to do this and three fingers to do that and da 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 da. So yeah, it's just weird.
Why is this so hard to find? Like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I see if you hold the power button down, you get an option to power off or restart? And all I have is a power off. How do I get the restart?
Good question.
Dun dun dun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what magical combination of words I need to have put in the search for this instead of getting everything but what I'm looking for. Ay ay ay. Man, I've had this phone for like 4.5 years now, I think. 5 years.
Time for a new one, dude.
It's running Android 7. What are they on now?
Oh, 11 just came out.
There we go.
That's like where, okay, one of the other things that's kind of, I'm kind of interested in, but not so interested in is, well, I like DMR, which is another digital mode, digital mode radio thing. But basically, it's what came out of what Motorola used to use for digital modes for the public sector, that the public sector hardly uses anymore. So the amateur radio folks started taking it over. Okay. So one of the things you need is to program the radio. In DMR parlance, they call that a code plug, because back in the day, that's what they used. When you had a radio, you had to have a certain code plug in order for you to be able to talk to the talk groups and stuff that you needed to talk to. Well, now it's just an electronic program, essentially. So part of the problem, though, is if the repeater, like, say that you're in a group of, you have a group of amateur radio friends that it's getting to tech. Yeah, I mean, I'll get to it here in a minute. But if you have a group of friends and say the repeater has a talk group on it, but you don't have that in your code plug, you can't talk to them and you can't program it from the keypad easily. It's actually quite difficult to program it for the keypad. So to kind of get around that a little bit, there's been a kind of a movement to basically merge like an Android device with a radio, so that you basically have an Android device which has not just a Wi-Fi on it, but it also has the your 2 meter and 70 centimeter radio, and it has LTE in it, so that you can hook up to like T-Mobile or AT&T. Usually T-Mobile and AT&T. Verizon's usually not one of the ones that you can use. So essentially the device will be between $500 to $1,000, you know, as much as a phone would be. Okay. Well, part of the problem, though, is there might be like I think the name of the one that I was looking at was the R-Finder M1. The problem is it comes with Android 7.1, and there's probably no chance that it's going to get a newer version of Android. And that's one of the reasons why I'm not a huge fan of those things. But the nice thing with them, though, is that there's no code plug. You can just say, oh, I want to talk on talk group, blah, 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 on this frequency, and then there you go. And it's just all programmable from the Android interface. But it's just like the tablets, just like our Jide. It just doesn't get an OS update, like, in ever.
Wait, which one is that? How much does that run?
The M1 is, I think it last I looked at it was it was like between 500 and 1,000. I can't remember. Let me look it up here. There runs a 4-watt radio on it instead of a 5-watt like my handheld had. Maybe let me try the R-Finder shop.
Okay. I'm going to switch the subject back to one we've already gone over. Dan, mm-hmm. On your R4 or R3, or I think it's an R4, that has the emulators already on it, right?
Not to my knowledge. The only thing the R3 had or R4 had, the only thing mine had on it was that... All I remember doing was getting ROMs and putting them on there for the DS.
Okay.
Lite. Okay. I don't know if I tried GBA games or any other emulation. It's possible. Let me see if I can.
Yes, the R-Finder B1 is $800.
Ouch.
I actually take it back. Hold on. It's $1,000. No, I'm not doing it. Not for an Android 8.1 device. No way. And it is supported on Verizon, but there's no way I'm paying for a SIM for that.
Oh man, I must have ordered it off my old Android account, my Amazon account before. Let me see if I can log into that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're trying to look up your phone?
No, he's trying to look up a card that he bought.
Now, oh yeah, that's right.
Oh, you don't have it anymore?
I have it somewhere. I don't know offhand where it is.
Okay.
Give me a second. How the hell do you log out of... Oh, there we go.
Well, I was hoping that it had emulators on it already and the file structure that you would use. Because that would be helpful in me figuring out how to set up my own.
Oh, I hate these. I haven't logged into this in
decades.
Centuries.
Wait, let me.
Yeah, $28 for a new sim.
Do I have, did I record with my old Amazon password? Okay, here we go. All right, here we go. Hold on, let me try this. Dun, dun, dun. What? Holy crap, I can't even read this. See a new channel. Oh, here we go. I hate when they have these and you can't tell whether it's a capital or a lowercase letter.
Time for some bifocals, Dan.
Well, no, it's like it's the CAPTCHA thing.
Oh, those things. Yeah.
Alright, here we go. Dun dun dun. Now I gotta get the I get the notification that comes to my phone to approve it. Alright, here we go. Whoa, that watch is not even in my old orders there.
I found an R4. That's a 4 gigabyte kit for $25, but you know, I can easily swap out the card.
Wow, I don't know where I ordered this thing. Oh shit, that might have been off of like a complete, I don't
AliExpress.
Remember. No, this was before. This was way before AliExpress was. What? Let me see what my orders. God, how far back do I have to go? Oh man, this might be. I haven't bought anything off of this account since 2010.
Damn.
How many Amazon accounts do you have?
Well, I had this one, and then my so I had one, and my wife had one, and then when Prime came out, you know, when they had the Prime stuff, and we're like, let's get a Prime account, but we should probably have just a single account. Because if I order like a book on a Kindle, like the Kindle book, I can't, she can't read it because it's in the account that I was using, and I can't read anything that she had. So we all had to just decide on one account. Yeah. And that's what we've been using, just that one family account. But I'm looking back on my orders and seeing HTC MyTouch 3G slide card charger. Wow, that was MyTouch phone.
I'm just wondering if the R4 is the exact same as what I have. It's just this comes preloaded.
I apologize, Joe.
No worries, man. I asked you out of nowhere.
Pot left channel, I'm disconnected.
Who dis? Oh. What Pat. I remember... What I remember, it was just a DSi's cartridge with a slot for a micro SD card.
Which is basically what mine is.
Yeah, and I can't... I know all I did was put the ROMs on the SD card, and I don't remember whether they went in to a specific folder or not. And as far as I know, all it did was have this, like, interface in the card that would just... Yep. Read the list of ROMs.
That's what I got.
And you would go through that interface to select them. I don't think it had any other emulators on there. Like, it didn't do any like arcade or any other kind of emulation. All it would let you do was play what the DS was capable of playing.
Okay. Now, I am looking up. There's an R4M3 card. Maybe that's why you're getting R3 stuck in your head. So you can put emulators on there. So I could put a Genesis emulator on there or an NES emulator on there. And I'd love to play original Nintendo games on there. So I am going to definitely try it out on this card and see what happens. Now, I was able to take the games that were on the 16 gigabyte card and put them with the control software that's on there onto a 32 gigabyte card. And that worked. So I have grabbed a bunch of other... of my DS ROMs that I had sitting around and loaded them into another folder on that 32 gigabyte card. And now I am going to give it a try and see if I can play my own ROMs. And then later on, I'll try the NES emulator if I can find one.
I think when I got the it's R4, right?
It's either it's called an R4 or an M3.
All right, when I got I had an R4 then, and I guys, I don't know where my DS is. I think my daughter has it. When I got my R4, they didn't sell them on Amazon at the time. You could only get them through
right.
There was a Japanese importer, I think it was, is where I was getting them from. I remember like $50. I don't even think they were that much. I don't remember how much it was. somewhere between 30 and 50 bucks, and you couldn't get them on Amazon at the time.
Yeah. Well, now they're almost 30 bucks. And I was able to load my own ROMs.
When you say your own ROMs, those are like DS ROMs or GBA
ROMs? Yeah, DS ROMs. ROMs. I haven't tried GBA yet. It's just DS ROMs so far. I think I would need some kind of emulator. And now the DS Lite has the slot for GBA. And it will play GBA games. I tested that because I had one. But I haven't tested emulation, and I know they make multi carts for GBA that you can use in the DS Lite, and some really cool stuff comes on those, like all the Sega games and stuff like that. But I don't know about just using the R4, or if this is the same as an R4, if I can use this to do it. Might be worth a try, though, so I will see. And like I said, the 3DS XL doesn't have the slot for Game Boy Advance. But it should be able to play them really easy.
Yeah. Man, I wish I would have tried that. But I was just too focused on the DS games, and I didn't really care too much about the Game Boy Advance or any of the others at the time. But yeah, I know, I'm almost positive at the version that I got did not have any, like, any other kind of emulation software on it.
Yeah, I think you have to load up emulation software. So, like, it'll be a DS game, but it'll be an emulator.
You mean the emulator itself registers as a DS game, and then...
I'm sure it will. I have to find one before I can tell you for certain, but it seems likely that that's what it'll be.
Yeah, let me know how you do with that, because I don't recall... Not that I ever went looking. I just never... I know that if... See, now I'm thinking more on the consoles, like the Wii and the Wii U and stuff like that, that if you wanted to get emulators on there to do other things, you'd have to get, like, homebrew software on there to be able to do stuff like that.
No, well, the R4 was supposed to be a way to run homebrew without, you know, having to modify your DS.
Uh-huh. And you probably can do it. I never tried. I'm not sure what the homebrew scene is like on the DS. I've never really looked into it. How is it?
I've barely started looking into it. Not enough to be able to tell you anything about it. But from what I've seen, I know with the new 3DS XL, they have all the way up to like N64 emulation. And I think PlayStation 1 emulation. But I don't know. I haven't tried much. So, and you do get homebrew, and there's a lot of people that have made some Mario Brothers ripoffs, and a lot of those look kind of cool. But I haven't tried anything yet. I will let you know when I do try something and it comes out okay. Or if it comes out crappy.
Yeah. Because
I expect I'm going to be trying out as much as I can.
Hey, why not? The internet is your oyster. Slap all that shit on that card.
Right.
Were you able to pull the ROMs off the other card?
Yes.
Like, were they all accessible?
Yes, that was the first thing I did for testing, since, you know, I had those readily available. Uh-huh. I pulled those, and it did require me to copy some control files over, or some configuration files, I should say. And as long as I had all of them there together, it will let me go into different folders and set things up the way I want to. And anything I want.
Did the files after have I transferred
over, they worked. They have descriptive names, and then they end in .nds.
Okay, so like you can look at a file and know what the game is. It's not like some kind of weird janky. So they, I'm just surprised they made it just so easy.
So easy.
Super easy. Yes.
Well, that's like the at games arcade stand-up that I've been thinking about getting. You can actually stream Xbox games to it. If you have an Xbox, of course, which I don't. Well, I have an Xbox 360. But
I'm assuming that you could probably do the same thing with Windows games, couldn't you stream it to it?
That's a possibility, but I need to actually find that thing. It'd be nice to, you know, because, you know, I thought about, you know, do I want to build something of my own, or don't want to buy an old cabinet and then put a Pi in it, or, you know, and I really.
Sounds a whole lot easier than building the whole thing.
I was going to say, and that's the thing, and that goes the same for one of the other projects I was thinking for my home office. Is one thing that, have you ever heard or seen of a magic mirror?
Yeah.
Basically, it's a mirror that has an LCD behind it, so it's a two-way glass, you know, or one-way glass, I should say. So one side's a mirror, the other side you can see through. So you put the screen on the other side, you boot it up off of Pi, and you have like a temperature display and news and all sorts of information. You can program it of sorts. Well, I started looking around and seeing, well, what would I need to build something like that? And ironically, I'd only need $150. And if you actually figure out the cost of all the pieces, it will probably cost that anyway to put it together. And there's a fully built thing on Amazon from Vilros, which Vilros sells a lot of the Pi stuff. So really, the only thing you have to add to it is you have to add maybe a Pi 0W or a Pi 4, and that's it. Everything else you have. The only thing I haven't figured out is if you look on their the Amazon page for it, it shows it just hanging on the wall and no wires coming from it, which I'm like, oh, that ain't gonna happen. unless you drilling holes in the wall. So but for $150, and I believe it's a 21-inch mirror, you know, 21-inch size mirror, and I think the screen goes from top to bottom, so it's not just a lot, because that's what a lot of other folks have done is they'll buy that piece of glass, but then they'll have a screen that's only so big, like they may only have like a 7-inch display or something like that, so then you have to paint out the rest of the mirror so it looks like a mirror instead of seeing through it, you know, seeing the light and stuff through it, so it looks more like a mirror than it does than other stuff. But it's like, do I want to go through all the effort of making it look nice, or do I just want to buy something where I can just plug the Pi in and set the program up and do it? That's probably what I want to do, is just do that. Because the same thing goes with these arcade stand-ups too. I mean, I can always modify something that I get later. If there's something on it I don't like, or something about it I don't like, you know, but in a lot of cases now, some of this stuff is getting to be so popular that it hardly seems worth the effort to go build your own thing, unless you have something specific. So,
well, making your own cabinet is also a multi-discipline type of skill set.
Yep, gotta be good with a router and a saw and painting and all that other stuff.
Yep. So much easier just to grab something that's got a screen already and preferably controls, although you can do control yourself easy enough.
Well, it's also easy enough, too, on some of those, too. Like, for example, some of those will have pretty shitty base controls. So, I mean, if all you have to do is swap out the shitty controller for, like, a Sanwa stick or something like that, or a set of Sanwa buttons, you know, that is a good thing, too.
Yeah. And in the end, you still have a good working product.
Yep, we're working well enough for me, you know. And in some respects, you know, do you want to mess with emulation or do you want to play with the real hardware? And the certain things, I just want to play with the real hardware.
Yeah, you know, I can understand what you're saying there, wanting to do it like with an actual arcade. And yeah, that's good if you're a collector. But one, super expensive for working arcade hardware of that classic vintage. And two, difficult to keep working.
Well, that's if you buy an actual a Pac-Man cabinet or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking more of along the lines like for example, the one system I probably don't want to emulate is the one I already have, which is my Atari 800 XL. Oh. So I have that. Just the only thing I really need to do is get the things I need to hook it up to an HDTV, which is, you know, not all that difficult.
Right. A couple of adapters. You get up to an HDTV. But if you're planning on making it cabinet style, then you need to rework the controllers.
Correct. So, and then if you look at, I actually posted the link on Sam's Club to this thing, and they had it last Christmas. They have it this Christmas. The Legends Ultimate Cabinet.
Yeah.
So that's the one I'm talking about here. It's actually got Wi-Fi in it. And I believe
Means that it is emulation.
Yes. It has 300 licensed arcade and console games included, pre-installed. It has BIOS. Oh,
it's a great place to pull ROMs.
Mm-hmm. And it lets you play digital PC games with unique controls and display. But BYOG is $1 an hour with a minimum of 10 hours purchase or stream for free from your PC. It has HDMI and USB connectors for at games devices like the Blast and the Boom, which I've never heard of either of those. And it has esports and online leaderboards and all that other garbage. So some of the stuff I really wouldn't care about, you know, like online leaderboards, I don't care about that. I just want to play the game. So, it has two joysticks, 6 action buttons, it has a trackball and 2 spinners. So, like, you can play games like, what's the one I'm trying to think of that has a spinner and you're shooting,
Tempest?
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of, yeah. So you can play Tempest on it. See, the only thing about this, like now, what's funny too is if you look at this, it has a picture of, it has a Star Wars logo on it, and that's not the actual Star Wars arcade game, but it's actually the Super Star Wars games from the SNES. Remember those?
Yeah.
So it has those. But I think if I remember right, it actually had combat on it, and a lot of 2600 games on it too, so. In fact, I showed Luke, my son, Atari 2600 bowling, and he's like, "What's that, Dad?" I said, "That's bowling." He's like, "That ain't bowling. That's dots, Dad." I was like, "That's what we had, dude."
Could have shown him football.
Yeah. Poor, Or the game we all got excited for, but were utterly disappointed on the Atari 2600, and that would be Pac-Man.
Everybody loved Pac-Man, right? That piece, that was garbage.
It was awful, wasn't it? And a lot of people will malign the E.T. for the Atari 2600, but I actually didn't mind it. It was an okay game. It was hard, but that's okay.
Oh, I didn't like it at all.
Yeah, what, the E.T. game? Yeah. It's definitely not my favorite game.
It was not... Not something I would recommend anybody.
It was
playing.
Not good. Oh, and this Legends Ultimate actually has a game that we've probably all seen in a movie, but never played, and that would be Fix It Felix.
That's a real game.
Okay. Yeah, apparently, they made a real game out of that from Wreck-It Ralph.
Okay.
Fix It Felix. Yep. But, yeah, something like that I'm thinking would be pretty cool. And it's got, you know, enough logos and stuff on it, 80s style design. And then if I got tired of the hardware in it, I could probably try and make it work for other stuff. But what I'd love to have, though, is if you look at that Rogue Synapse page we talked a little bit about last week for the last Starfighter, I'd like to build that cabinet. Actually have the game controls they had in the movie would be cool. But the original arcade game they were developing for The Last Starfighter was actually going to use the same controller that Star Wars Arcade used.
Hmm.
So that Fung Yoke with the four buttons on it.
Yeah, I think I've seen that picture.
Yep.
Fun.
Ba-bum, bum, bum.
Oh, yeah. We gotta start wrapping this up. Yep.
Yeah, it's about that time.
It is.
Where are you gonna be this week, Joe?
Ooh, this week? Here. That's it.
Oh, boy.
Last week was, the Linux Lugcast and Mintcast. So the first half of the episode should be available on RSS for the Mintcast, and Linux Lugcast should definitely be available. But this is my slow week.
It's your week off, huh?
Yeah, it's kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since yesterday I ended up having to put in 13 hours at work and still getting called at 1:30 in the morning.
Did you get a day off for that?
No, I took 2 hours off today, though. Said to hell with you guys, I can't keep my eyes open anymore. I'm going to go take a nap.
That was me last Sunday where I had a, I had a file maintenance. And then we were going into, we've been doing these sessions where the team would all gather on a Zoom session and we patch, we do it twice, like every other week or so. 1 week we do non-prod, the next week we do prod. And part of what we're doing is basically we're testing the automations. So they're doing, I mentioned that last week, where we're basically, we run the script that shuts the server, you know, such services down, then from Jenkins, and then we patched the Windows and the Linux machines. The Linux machines through probably RHN, since they're all Red Hat. Believe they're 6 or 7. It just depends on what client right now. And then the Windows machines get patched by IBM Big Fix. So once Big Fix and RHN's done, they reboot the boxes, and then we run the startup, which should bring the whole application back up and running. And all we had to do was really validate that it did. And nonprofit's a little more difficult in that we have some background processes that we don't have running that we would normally have running in a production environment. Like, for example, the process handler may not run in a non-prod because we don't want automated jobs happening in a non-prod environment. But before that, before it was time for that party, I had to file maintenance that some of the stuff that we have, I don't know that we'll ever be able to automate it because there's a, especially for our Linux only clients, Linux where the core system's Linux and not two Windows boxes. Linux has one machine and at the core, and Windows and SQL have two machines, an app server and a DB running the SQL. So the file maintenance for the Linux clients, there's a paragraph that runs during the day, that a paragraph which is essentially, you know, a program that runs during the day, or every night, I should say, that looks at all the files and says, oh, is this file the right size? Because we're talking essentially multi-valued tables and files and stuff like that. So, but if you run the script and the script says, oh, there's a damaged file, well, you have to fix that file, that damaged file, before you can really move on. And you have to do that manually. There's no other way. You can't automatically fix that file. But luckily I didn't have any of that. And the same thing goes where we run a couple routines that does an index analysis. And in a normal situation, everything just goes fine. And you're done in an hour and you're out, but you're doing this at like 2 a.m. So, eventually we're going to try and have our Bangalore team do these things. But the problem is can they handle it when things just don't go right, which can't happen. So
can they do simple really, troubleshooting?
Yeah, sometimes you would think that would be possible.
No, believe me, I know.
I know. Yeah, I know. That's my worry is like, you know, like can they do that, you know? But in any event, you know, hopefully we get that to where I don't have to do it, because there's only like 3 or 4 of the people on our team that can really do it, and we've got like 13 Linux clients, so it's like, yeah, you know, but we have to start doing it because we haven't been, and we're gonna have problems if we don't. So. But I did that, and then I rolled it right out of that into this patch cycle. I ended up only getting one client to validate, one of my Windows clients. And then I said, you know what, guys? I can't keep my eyes open. And I'm like, I got to go to bed because it's like 3 a.m. It's like, eh, I'm done.
Yeah, that's so, what I had to do.
Yep. Automation is your friend until it's not anymore.
Until somebody upstream screws it up.
Mm-hmm. So I was trying to mess with Ansible today, but then I kept having problem after problem for other things. So I need to work on deploying Tomcat 8 to this session in the non-prod environment and get everything. At least I got everything backed up so that the state, when the stage directory gets wiped out, I can easily get everything back up and running pretty quickly. But it's like, but And I was also doing a lot of work this week with SAP Business Objects, but that's no fun. No fun at all. So, well, everyone enjoy Ubuntu's 2010 release and play with your Raspberry Pi with 8 gigs and get Ubuntu running, desktop running on that. There you go. That'll be fun. And everyone have a great week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let me play this out.
Yes, sir.
Have a great week. Oh, I'm not going to be here next week. I have my daughter's birthday next week. So
happy birthday, Lily.
No.
Paige.
Avery.
Avery. Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
You have so many girls.
Yeah.
Poor Dan, you need some testosterone from time to time.
Yeah, that's why he gets on the show.
Anytime soon.
That's right.
All right. So, I don't know if you guys want to do it. Somebody record or whatever, but... So, with that, we'll play this out. Have a good week. I'll see you in 2 weeks, whatever. Take a week off. I know you got your vet stuff there, Joel.
Yes, sir.
So, good luck with that.
Chase the kitty down and get him shots.
That's
so
right.
The kitty continues, so that the kitty can continue to live here. The apartment complex actually wants the vet records. That and all the other little bullshit that you get from living in an apartment complex, which is 10 times worse now than it was 20 years ago, just confirms why building another house was the right choice. Because it's just like, it just feels like, you know, like I guarantee you, if you lived in your own home for X amount of time, however long that is, and then you go and rent again, you're gonna hate it, because it feels like a big invasion of privacy in some respects. But I understand why they do that. You know, it's like, I got an email from the apartment complex today. Friday they're sending the exterminator out again, and I'm like, so he's got to come and spray. And it's like, I'm like, we haven't even been here a month and they've been out twice, probably three times too, because our the one tub's not draining. So anyway, have fun.
All right, here we go. Take it away.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
Oh my God, it's Hacker
Public Radio! Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room. Sushi.
I'm gonna stop the recording and say goodnight, Joel. Goodnight.
Instead of having it in a container?
Yeah, it'll be okay for all the longer I'm gonna have it on there. I'm gonna have it on there long enough to get about 10 to 12 spinners off of it, and then at that point I'll switch back to BLA. I'm not too worried about it. It's dry enough right now with the heat on and all that that it's not going to pick up a lot of moisture, at least in the room I'm in now.
Okay. You've been warned.
I'm with you, though.
When it starts, and also sometimes the company you get it from, if it starts grinding,
right,
then or popping, then yeah, it's wet. Because like the center of my full of Pet G, was just wet as hell. And sounds like Dan's taking a shower again.
Yeah. Remember, I got the extruder with both gears on both sides, so I'm not too worried about grinding too much, but...
Yeah.
And I'm printing it fairly hot. I'm right at 244. With the... I have 70 on the bed right now, although I ended up having to basically completely wipe my Cura installation and including the printer profile, because for some stupid reason, when I first fired up, and I'm associating it with Pet G, but it might have been happening on PLA, but it for some reason didn't show as much, but it had this massive retraction in the G code, and I don't know why.
Well, you can always fix that.
Well, I did. What I ended up doing is I just completely wiped my Cura installation. I knew the temperatures I had in my profiles anyway. That's the main thing I changed in most of them. So, in fact, I actually still have the filament profiles. I just did a brand new printer setup, deleted the printer, re-added it, and that was fine. It didn't do it anymore. So, and I also tried it with had a little bit better luck initially with the latest alpha of the Prusa slicer.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't get the quality down to where I wanted it. And so once I did that with Cura, wiped everything, it actually gave me really great quality. So better than my PLA prints have been. So.
Yeah, well, I get good out of PLA, and I get good out of Pet G. I get decent out of Pet G. I got some settings to work on there with retraction. Yeah. But I just can't get shit for ABS right now.
I'm not even going to try ABS. It's, I don't have the space to build an enclosure, so...
Yeah, maybe I need to... seal up my enclosure a little bit better, but even then, it's too much of a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I'm not too much of a fan of ABS anyway. Pet G is close enough in quality in durability.
Yeah, I've gotten some durability, and if it's small enough, I guess it has some flexibility. But I've gotten some really good prints out of it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was aiming for. I printed the same thing, same color, not the color matters, but same color PLA. And when I go to pop the bearings in, it would crack along a couple different places on it. The first spinner I made today printed perfectly. Well, a little bit of threads here and there, I didn't care. They were just easy enough to pull off. And then... when I put the bearings in, perfect.
Testing.
And you do not sound like you're in a shower.
Hello?
And guess what tomorrow is? Tomorrow is Ubuntu Day. Tomorrow is Ubuntu Day.
I'm sorry, hold on.
Ubuntu 2010.
Oh my goodness, I had the stream on, and I was hearing what you guys were saying, and then I was hearing what you guys were saying like 3 seconds later, 4 seconds later. So I was like trying to hear myself. Oh, sorry. Eh.
Nice.
Oy, oy, oy.
And next Wednesday evening, before the show, I have the fun job of trying to corral my cat and get him to the vet so I can get them his vaccinations. Well, that will be fun.
We should talk. We should start the show.
Yes, we should.
Shouldn't we?
Probably. It might be helpful. Maybe.
You guys are talking about a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm just trying out this 3DS. I'm going to talk about that.
Oh, wow. Oh, man.
It's Ubuntu Day. Tomorrow.
Yeah, that means I gotta update my shit.
Hey, don't forget to update your shit.
Yeah, it's Ubuntu Day.
Update your shit before you take your shit.
Yeah.
All right, let's 477.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start it off. Bum 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 bum. Bam.